its management or other
Log Talk Radio.
The responsibility of the host of this program and not KKNW. This is Alternative Talk 1150 AM, KKNW Seattle, and KNUC 98.9 HD3 Seattle.
And good Tuesday to you. Benny Mathers here for a look at your Alternative Talk AM 1150 traffic update for around the town over on I-5 northbound just north of Columbian Way. Their recent collision partially blocked in the HOV lane. Good thing Seattle police have arrived on the scene and they are taking care of that collision. Also, I-5 southbound express lanes just north of Mercer Street around Mile Post 169, a little further up, an obstruction blocking the right hand of the lane. Since the response team has arrived on the scene, they are taking care of that obstruction. Stay tuned, coming up next after the news weather. It's 2 hours of the Transformation Talk Radio Network. And the first hour, it's the Dr. Pat Show, Talk Radio to Thrive By and the Way of the Wild Goose. Stay tuned. NBC News Radio, I'm Lisa Taylor. The southern border is seeing another record set. Federal agents have arrested more than 1.8 million illegal immigrants so far this fiscal year. That beats last year's total, and there's still 2 months left of reporting. First Lady Jill Biden has COVID. She's double vaccinated and has received 2 booster shots. Meantime, the president tested negative for the virus after recently recovering from it, but could get reinfected. Senior medical correspondent Dr. John Torres with more.
He's going to up his testing routine to make sure that that doesn't happen, or if it does, they can take care of it. But on top of that, they did say he's a close contact. So because of that, he's going to mask for the next 10 days. He will test at day 6, like the CDC recommends, and go through the regular protocols. But being that close contact, he has to be careful of those he's around as well.
Just like her husband, the First Lady is taking Paxlovid to treat her symptoms. Families in the Texas town of Uvalde aren't letting up on their demands that school police chief Pete Arredondo be fired. He was in charge the day of the school massacre, and at a school board meeting last night, there were calls for him to go.
I understand forgiveness, but I think there's also what's called accountability.
The board didn't fire Arredondo last night, but they did approve the rules for a termination hearing. No date has been set, but the board plans to tell families first. Arredondo is on unpaid leave, and he's hired a lawyer. The operators of the embattled Texas power grid have hired a new leader. Pablo Vegas currently serves as executive vice president of NiSource, which is one of the largest utility companies in the country. The Electric Reliability Council of Texas fired their former CEO following a severe winter storm last year. More than 4 million Texans were left in the dark for days, and nearly 250 people died. There's new information about the man arrested on suspicion of causing an active shooter scare inside Harry Reid International Airport in Las Vegas. Authorities say he was arrested twice at the airport in less than 24 hours during the weekend. The man is also accused of burglarizing a business inside Harry Reid Airport Sunday morning. You're listening to the latest on NBC News Radio.
5X480, Dayton Z100 V-Belt, one of the many parts Ranger carries. It's also the item that helped Rob carry the day. The job was on hold, the deadline fast approaching. But a quick search on Granger.com and Rob found his part. With same-day pickup at his local branch, he and his crew got the job done, safely and on time. Get supplies and solutions for every industry with real-time product availability. Call quickgranger.com or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
And let's go ahead and take a look now to Alternative Talk Weather Outlook for Tuesday. We'll see some morning clouds, but it'll burn off to mostly sunny skies by this afternoon. High temperatures around 79, 80 degrees. Tonight, clear skies, low temperatures back down to about 61, 62. For Wednesday, Thursday, and a little bit of Friday, those temperatures in the upper 80s to low 90s in selective areas, so be aware of that. Increasing clouds in the evening, but we'll still see mid-50s through the overnight. Partly sunny skies returning for Friday. Highs around 80.
The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. This program is sponsored by Dr. Pat Vasily and Transformation Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome. This is Dr. John DeMartini. This is one of the most amazing and inspiring shows that you can listen into. If you want to be on the edge of your seats, if you want to open up your heart, if you want to expand your mind, and you want to meet incredible people, stay tuned because you're just about to experience a transformative radio show that will change your life. And you're listening to the Dr. Pat Show that's coming up right next.
Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. Talk radio to thrive by. Powerful, inspiring, and coming to you live, bringing you stories of people like you and me, busting through and living life full out. Get ready to dare to wonder what your life would be like if you knew you could not fail. Hey,
Hey, everybody. Welcome. It's so great to have all of you tune us in and turn us on today. We're going to be talking with Didi Vaharani, and what we're going to be talking about is we're going to talk about the way of the wild goose. We're going to be getting to experience the journey that, you know, she has taken. You know, when we talk about three pilgrimages, I love this. I just love this. I love the book, and I love that we get to talk about it. Because what happens when you decide you're going to be following geese, stars, and hunches? What happens when you do that? What happens when you do it and you decide to go in the Camino de Santiago? And what happens when you look at your life and you take a look at what that means? What happens when you bump right up against an adventure, a pursuit? Maybe there's mysteries that you didn't anticipate. But what is it about you that has to be prepared for it? And what is it about this journey that changes you? Before we get into it and I tell you a little bit more about my very special guest, I want to say hello to Micah and hello to Benny. Hi, Micah and Benny. Another day in the life of, right? Many of you ask me, how many producers do we have? Well, we have as many as we need. You know, of course, you've heard Micah, you've heard Jacob, you've heard Benny. Some of you work with Lydia, and then, of course, there's Jessica, and every once in a while, you'll see me get behind the mixing board, but that is really not my strong suit. But all of it is about a journey. And when I think about Didi, when I think about my guest, and I think about who she is, Dr. Didi, when I think about award-winning traveler, anthropologist, she's going to help me explain to my best friend, Linda, why I'm so struck by the History Channel. So many people, they tune into other things, they watch other things, but when you come to my television and you turn it on, why is the History Channel on? Because I think at some point in my life, I'm a closeted adventurer, and now I adventure in the digital way. But if you are, if you're Dr. Didi, this is what you are. You travel. You're so fascinated. You have gone to places. You have seen things. But then you have gotten to take the adventure of what I call understanding. See, it's one thing to go see, but it's another thing to take the adventure of understanding. See, that is the core for me. If all of us were to take the adventure of understanding, it doesn't matter what political realm you're in, this would be a very different place. And when you take that, you will be amazed and shocked at what you discover. Because what seems like a carving in stone is actually a story, maybe even a message. If you're wondering why the country of Chile is so amazingly, as my friend would say, supernatural, I don't call it that, but why is it in this one country, why is there the adventure of more sightings, more glyphs, more carvings, more amazing things that ancient people have done? And if you understand that question of why, then you'll understand my very special guest today, her fantastic book, The Way of the Goose, and why the why without judgment is so important to understanding. Dr. Didi, it's great to have you. Welcome to the show.
Dr. Pat, it's so great being here. Thank you.
I was reading your book, and I was just looking at just a glimpse of your life. Let's just call it a glimpse for a moment, because there's no way I can understand it. And I think before the show, I was telling you how I was reminded of Olivia Newton-John. I consider her my friend, and I was reminded of when she decided to take that journey, and we did several shows with her to follow her on that journey. But for people that are listening, from your perspective, this idea of journeying to understand, it seems like it's been a part of you since, as far as I could read about you. How did you come to be in that way?
What a great question. I think I've always realized that if you get boots on the ground, you learn a whole lot more than if you just stay at home and read about it. and that's also a good thing to do. But I've always just been curious about what's over the next hill and what might that teach me about where I am. And I also think when I really got into my interest in spiritual traditions and meditation, I realized I'm not a sitting still meditator. I need to go for a walk. And as I walk, not only am I learning about the world out there, but I'm casting the road within, and I'm learning about what's going on inside and the two connect. So I've always just been really curious, and then I discovered what a powerful tool to learn about. What you're going to learn until you go over the next hill and you get out of your
This is really what I love about this, because, you know, as we're talking about this, I love that the energetic, you know, wavelengths start to tap into, because here's what I know after doing this for 20 years. You know, what I know about this is that in the world we live in and how we live into it, when we say yes to something, right, something else changes, and it creates a ripple effect.
Absolutely.
And I think that's what you're talking about. And I believe that's in your book in so many different ways in so many different places, right?
Yes. I mean, people say, why do you keep going back on walking the Camino? What's so special about the Camino? And the Camino is saying yes to something that you don't really quite understand. You just feel called to go and explore. And all these synchronicities start showing up.
Benny, Micah, why don't we take a short break if we could, and when we come back, let's see what we can do here, because I think we've got a lot of energy.
I think it's because of the yes.
Yeah. Let's just take a quick break if we could, Benny and Micah, and when we come back, more with this amazing journey and adventure.
Hey. I'm wondering if I need to change my location.
And that's what I'm trying to get to. Micah and Benny, are we at break? I'm not sure what happened to those guys.
Yeah. I can go
live on air, Micah?
No, we're not.
Okay, Benny, we're off air.
Okay. Let me change the location, try to get somewhere closer to the Wi-Fi.
Yes.
I might actually have to go outside.
Just do what you need to do. I will make sure Benny stretches this.
Can it be a problem? On my way out.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know if it's the high wind. Whoa, we're having.
It's okay.
But, or maybe it's the goose goddess. Location.
Better. Micah, what do you think? Yeah, just get yourself set up. It sounds like for some strange reason you even sound clear.
Okay, good. Good.
Yeah. I can go with this. I like that.
All right. Center myself.
Smart you are about framing.
You know, maybe the goose goddess wanted me outside in her element.
Mm-hmm.
All right. ready whenever you guys are.
Yeah, that's pretty good right there.
Yeah. All right. Thank you.
How do you feel, Jess?
Okay.
Well, how about you tune in and get ready to be more with the Healing Hour with me, Doc Martin, every third Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. I'm ready for your questions, and I can't wait to help you find the answers. Every month, we'll have a new live call-in show with innovative topics and a powerful hour of healing. To learn more about me, visit DrSharonMartin.com. See you there. I'm going to be here. You won't want to miss it.
Hey, everybody, welcome. It's so great, again, to be connecting with all of you. I got to tell you, I mean, I can't tell you. I think I'm going to have my guest talk about things to you because I have been asked, and I am being asked more often than not about how I got here, right? I learned that through reading your book, Dr. Beebe, I learned that by reading your book, there may not be a logical answer to people to tell them how I got here, because on paper, it doesn't seem logical. But when I take a look at, correct me if I just, when I look at the watercolor and the pen and ink, because I'm a visual, right?
Right.
Of course,
right.
I'm reading your book. Well, when I'm looking at this, I am thinking, if I could create the story to answer that question of how I got here to people, I would call on you to help me do it. I'd be like, please help me. Because I don't know how you came to understand the journey the way you have. Because not just this book, but your body of work, your life, pays so much respect and homage. You know, you just honor these journey, these places, as if you were part of the land, as if you were part of the wind. And that's why I asked you the question earlier about, you know, how did you come to be you? But it's interesting if we look at the goose as a totem, as medicine. Just a moment. Let's just take a moment to just honor, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not the only endeavor you had. And when I step back and I looked at the goose, the pigeon, the boar, the rabbit. Oh, I could talk about rabbit till I'm green. And you put it all together. And the way that you wrote the book and how you keep us engaged, it shows me just an acute honoring of the elements, of the four-legged, of the two-legged, of the crawling, of all of that. In your words, how did the pilgrimage, how did they change you? And can you recall moments along the way where you're like, what?
Oh, definitely. The pilgrimage changed me most profoundly by just inviting me to simplify everything, carry what I needed on my back. And it's amazing how little you need to live everyday life. So a few clothes, bottle of water, bit of food, and not just simplifying and saying this is all I need, but simplifying in the sense of dropping a lot of fear about what if, you know, what if I, this happens, do I have enough for this? Instead of shifting that and saying, let me just trust. This is a path that is going to support me and trusting. So I really, by walking the Camino de Santiago, I learned not only do I need very little, but I also found that every single day all my needs were met, and sometimes more than my needs. You know, it was just, even the hard days, there were great gifts at the end of it. And everything that I needed came to me. Living like that for 40, 44 days on end rewires you. And you go home and you realize, first of all, I don't need a lot of stuff. Second of all, I should trust life more. If I trust life more, I'll start seeing avenues that I didn't see that are open and inviting me to walk down them. It also changed me. I mean, all my life I've loved nature and I felt a connection to nature, and I'm very lucky. I was born in Colorado and I grew up in the mountains, so I was able to have that immediate access to wild, raw nature. But the Camino taught me more than any other experience in my life to be present and to listen, and that everything around us is actually speaking. Mm-hmm. And it's something that my friend Bernadette, the 89-year-old friend in Sarlat in southwestern France, she was, I was embarking on this journey of following the goose. She said, you really need to read more about the language of the birds. And I thought, well, it's poetic and mystical, but what does that mean, you know? And then I started discovering what it means is the language of nature. And it's a language that human beings have spoken and understood for a long, long time, but we started losing our ability to speak it the more and more we separated ourselves from nature. And I would say the last 500 years were the grand slam of that. Yeah. Real separation. But it taught me the language of the birds again and how to listen to nature and listen to the stories that everything around us has to tell us, not just other people.
Yeah, and that's what I love and wanted you to share about this, because it is the journey that you go on. And I love the advice to listen to the birds. I mean, it's fascinating when we think about that. You know, we think about what that really means. And sometimes we just cannot listen because our own minds are too busy. There's too much of a tailspin. There's too much, you know, noise in the channel. There's a deja vu in the matrix, whatever you want to call it, right? And for me, unlike you, I had to step away from my day-to-day, you know. And my journey, my first journey started in 1997. It's not that I didn't journey before that, because I had, what's the word I'm looking for? I had glimpses of what it would be like, mm-hmm. right? But not quite the way you describe in the book, and not quite the beauty of what you describe in the book, and the languages of this. Because let me ask you this question. We can refer to birds, but there is a uniqueness. There is a uniqueness when you look at a red cardinal or a cardinal, or you look at a duck, right? Mm-hmm. There is a uniqueness in each. And do you find that each has its own very unique, special understanding we can gain?
Absolutely. I mean, I think we all intuitively know when we watch the red cardinal what it can teach us. And it's very different from what a duck can teach us. Or a titmouse, or, you know, a sparrow. Definitely. And they all have their wisdom and their serious side, but they also have their sense of humor, and they teach us to lighten up a bit. You know, why are you taking this so seriously, really? You know, just be present.
It really is true. I mean, I grew up in New York, and I got to tell you, you know, it's fascinating because anybody that knows anything about New York will understand that you pretty much will be visited, especially like in Manhattan and some of the pigeons. Right? You are going to make friends with a pigeon, whether you want it or not. And I remember as a kid, you know, how fascinated I was. And I'll tell you what the hardest thing was for me growing up, and I never quite understood this till later on in life. This idea of don't feed the pigeons. And I never quite, as a kid, you just logically, it doesn't make sense. Right? Especially if you're drawn. And then when you get older, you kind of have a sense of it. But you talk about the pigeon as well.
Ah, on the Camino. Are you thinking about pigeon hunting season, perhaps?
Oh, my gosh. I can't even think about it. It's like sad. It's like crazy.
Yeah, that was definitely one of the first ordeals that met me on the first pilgrimage recounted in the book. Yeah, we were walking during pigeon hunting season in the remote forested areas of the Pyrenees on a less popular route in France, going the other direction on top of that. And the innkeeper the first night in Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port, when he learned we were walking in that direction, he said, by the way, it's pigeon hunting season. It's come early. And I was thinking, what is pigeon hunting season? I had no idea. Absolutely, absolutely naive to the ancient traditions of the Pyrenees and it being October. And it turns out that, indeed, pigeon hunting season altered the entire cadence of that whole three-week pilgrimage. For one thing, it shut down the inns and the restaurants and cafes in these remote areas because everyone was pigeon hunting. And for another, it set us up in competition in the forests with the pigeon hunters who wanted everyone to be very, very quiet for this bird. So, but then there was the boar hunter, and there was were the rabbit hunters.
Yeah.
Also in this, so many wonderful ordeals to deal with, and comedy, a lot of comedy in hindsight.
That's why you and I are laughing. I mean, for those of you tuning in, you're going to have to read the book.
Next of it.
But there is comedy when we meet nature, if we can see it. You know, look, the reason I ask you about the pigeon is because I spent a short period of time, although in my life it was really pivotal, as being homeless in New York City. And, you know, people often wonder about that. And one of the things that you, the hardest is, okay, I've never shared this on air, Benny, never. I always talk about the fact that I talk about dumpster diving, right, for food and hot dogs, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I never talk about this one thing because it was hard for me. If you grow up loving pigeons and then you're watching people that you're with in a situation look at that pigeon as food, is really hard to get past. I mean, honestly, for me, right, I was better at begging for money at the Port Authority so I would not have to resort to the pigeon, right? But I'm laughing a little bit about it now. I mean, I can laugh a little bit about it now. When you're in that situation, not so much. But even when you look at that and to find out that everything in the earth provides us with what we need.
Yes.
Now, there are some of people that I hung out with back then that thought I was nuts diving in dumpsters, yes. Right? The alternative for them was pigeon stew. I'm just saying, y'all. But that was an early lesson in my life.
Mm-hmm.
It really helped me discover part of myself.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what is not negotiable for Pat? Right?
Right.
And then you have to step back and laugh about it. Because while I'm digging for really somebody else's hot dog that they've half eaten, they're having a pigeon feast over there under the overpass. And I love the way life brings us full circle. But boy, you've had so many adventures.
Yes, nothing like what you just recounted.
Oh,
I mean,
I never shared that on air because I just remembered it as
chapter.
I was reading your book.
Yeah.
And it just came up.
Yeah.
But there's so many adventures, and there's so many lessons, and there's so much understanding. I want to take a short break, Benny. When we come back, I want to talk about some of the other journeys. You and I have had experiences with some of the other beautiful things of nature. One of the toughest experiences I've had was making peace with both a serpent and a fuzzy bee at the same time.
Mm.
Are you all ready to make peace with what is in your life? How do people get a copy of the book? And please, how do they find out more about you?
Yes.
Can we get them to your website?
Absolutely. They can find out all of this and how to get my book on my website. And they can just Google either the title of the book or my name, and it will appear. It's for sale everywhere. It's on bookshop.org. It's in your local independent bookstore. It's on all the online venues. You can get it from Monkfish Book Publishing as well, directly from the publisher.
Yep. And I just want to tell everybody, if you're wondering what this is, let me just say it again. It's The Way of the Goose, The Way of the Wild Goose, Three Pilgrimages Following Geese, Stars, and Hunches. When we come back, we're going to talk about the hunches, right? Why do some hunches feel like punches? That's what we're going to talk about. What happens when the hunches... I really think you should follow, feel like punches. What is the message? What is the understanding? Dr. Beebe and I will talk about that. Benny, Micah, let's take a short break. We'll be right back.
stuck in that someday attitude, living the same day over and over again with no action? The Becoming You Show, big ideas that inspire, impact, and influence your life with Leah Rowley is for you. Tune in every Friday at 11 a.m. Central on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This show will have you feeling inspired to take action with purpose and intention. For more information and to get in touch with me, visit www.leahrowley.com.
Have you been on life's roller coaster trying to figure out what to do next? Then join Greta, Lee, Yvonne, and the Realm of Being each Friday at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Take the dust off your wings and fly to the highest heights in your thoughts and actions. Express your greatness. Be a champion for yourself, and we'll see you there on Shifting Impressions Conversations with the Realm of Being.
Tune in to Spacious Unknowing Network, Communing with Your Soul, with Julio Rose and JoJo Rose, every Monday at 7 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Let your heart beat in the rhythm of your soul and guide you to new horizons and unlimited, infinite love.
There is divinity within you. Join Lisa Belz on her show, The Unshakable Living Show, Supernaturally and Divinely Unshakable, twice a month, and find that divinity that you deserve. Lisa will help you feel encouraged, empowered, and realize that you're not alone on your journey. With Lisa, address the foundation, the frame, and the finish of your dreams and become truly unshakable.
Boy, does this feel like good times today. It's so great to have all of you tune us in and turn us on. I love it. This is a show that's going to invite all of you to open up your hearts, because it's about dreams coming true. There's a road we get to take as we craft out and we lay a course that's in service of so many others. Sometimes the universe, God, whatever you believe in, have you ever wondered why, but better than why, or how the universe knows how to line things up in a way that gets you ready for the most expansive part of who you're going to become? This is the time to change. And gratitude, leading with love, opens up more expansive possibilities than you can imagine. Busting your way to an awesome life. I want to thank you all for tuning us in, turning us on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. Welcome back to the Dr. Pat Show. It's so great to have all of you tune us in, turn us on. Thank you so much for that. And I am so thrilled. We're talking about the Way of the Wild Goose. These are three pilgrimages, but I must say there's so much more here. First of all, it's a beautifully written book. But the other part of this that's so wonderful when you look at it is the sensory aspect of what you will feel and how you will see things through the eyes of Dr. Beebe. It's really just interesting when you open up the pages and you feel like, wait a minute, a magical trail. It continued. How did it continue? Are we going on a forbidden pathway? Or what is it about the goose? Do they fly together? What do you learn from them? And then, of course, if you're traveling across this incredible terrain, you know, whether you've never been there before or you know that the Romans have named it goose territory, right? Who knew they did that, right? But then what is the meaning of it? Is it trusting in the benevolence of the universe? Is it trusting in the magic of that? Is it shifting away, I think, as you, Dr. Beebe, say in the book, shifting away from fear thinking to trust thinking? Mm-hmm. Because that one part of the book alone is really the goal for many people today. So thank you for doing this, and thank you for writing it.
But this really leads me to this, you know, I mean, I know you know what I mean when you say hunches with punches, right? You know, right? You get a sense of what I'm alluding to with that.
Yeah.
That is about trust.
Absolutely. I mean, everyone, we all get hunches. We all get that sense of, well, it might be something that just hits us from the side and we weren't even expecting it, or we're just daydreaming or thinking about something, and something very true and honest hits our solar plexus, and we just kind of go, that feels good, that feels important, I need to explore that. And but a lot of times, you know, those hunches also are asking us to change something. You know, they are demanding that pound of flesh in a way to follow it, because a hunch might be a big hunch for me was I really was not I had worked in all kinds of different contexts, you know, from university professor to magazine editor to ethnographic consultant. And I really benefited and loved all of those walks of life, but they never fully felt like this is what I should be doing for the rest of my life. And the hunch was, you've always wanted to be a writer, you love writing, you need to go with writing. And there's not a job description that's comfortable in our society for, you know, handing your shingle out and saying writer.
You know? No.
And so it was, you know, it you really have to take some chances with those hunches, those deep, big hunches that are saying you're going to need to change your life. You're going to need to quit your job. You're going to need to wake up every morning at 5:30 and write, you know, and go in this direction. And I have no regrets that I followed that hunch, because it was really leading me to my best and true path, but it was really hard. It was really hard. And I learned well on the Camino that if you trust your hunches, even if it sends you through an ordeal and a challenge, it is always going to give you a gift at the end of that, and usually the gift is far better than anything you could have imagined. And I think it was actually the Camino that gave me the courage by having these little hunches that would keep, you know, every day the ordeals, but then the gifts would come. And I thought, well, if this happens consistently on the Camino, it should happen in life too, if we actually fully trust something that our real truth, inner truth, is telling us is the right direction to go, no matter whether it makes sense or not to ourselves, or even more so the world around us.
Yeah, and you know, this is why I love talking with you, and this is why the understanding in the book is so important, because what you and I were talking about during the break, I want to just really explain to people, mm-hmm. You know, you and I are human beings, right? We have enormous capacity for so much, including doubt.
And obtuseness.
And sometimes the revelations come from unknown places. They come from the strangest things. Now, not everybody listening to this is going to be able to book a flight and go on an adventure. But the point I want to make to everybody, we can create these adventures, because you don't necessarily have to travel afar to do them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you live in the state that I live in, Washington State, to be honest with you. You
don't have to leave home.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, you can get in a car and you can drive a half hour, and to be a place where you will see things and be open to hearing things that you've not imagined, right?
Right.
But it is that willingness and wantingness to really understand something that is invisible to the eye, perhaps, and that can transform you. I want to talk about the serpent or the snake for a minute.
Mm.
You know, growing up in New York, you know, you don't have a lot of snake activity going out there. But I also lived in New Jersey, and my fascination for rattlesnakes and snakes, especially the when you see them, serpents in Egyptian glyphs and paintings, is I've always been fascinated. I've been fascinated by these medicines that I've never even been confronted with, some of them. But I did get confronted with the snake. And why would that happen? And this is what I want to talk about in your book and this journey. You see,
I didn't know that sitting on a rock ledge in the high desert in the sun, I didn't understand that rattlesnakes like to do that too, sunbathing. And when you decide you're going to find this place and sit there, and you don't know that, your entire set of ego and fear will show up to the point where you're having a conversation with the snake and you're just so ignorant, unlike what your mentor told you about snakes, and you refuse to move and you think you are going to have it out with this snake on this ledge. What part of us gets to understand and learn? And I will tell you this, I'm not going to talk any more about it, but I will tell you, by the end of 3 days, the conversations I had with this beautiful creature, right? Mm. We got to share the ledge.
Yeah.
But I had to surrender so much. What did you learn on your journey?
Well, I'll back up a bit because, you know, what does the snake have to do with the Camino, with the coos?
Yes.
And
do it.
You know, why are you bringing it up? Because it clearly is in the book.
It is in the book.
Yeah. And that was one of the surprises for me, because once I started following the signs of the goose, which is the goose throughout human history and all the way back into prehistory, this is one of the most depicted animals in human art from the beginning, except for one other animal, and that is the snake. And I kept coming, encountering the snake as I was following the goose. And also even in more recent art forms that are creating the Camino with the goose, there's this game called The Game of the Goose that is a popular children's game in Europe. It rose out of the Middle Ages, probably has earlier precursors in ancient Greece and in ancient Egypt, but we know it as The Game of the Goose from around the 1500s. And it's in the form of a coiling serpent. And on the it's this board game that looks like a coiling serpent, like Snakes and Ladders, if you can imagine. And it has 13 geese throughout these 63 squares that are on this coiling spiral-shaped board game. And anytime a goose appears on a square, it's a good luck piece. But so here you have the goose and the snake form. That's just one example, but it keeps appearing. In medieval Romanesque art and the medieval churches of the Camino, there are a lot of depictions of women with snakes, and they're called femmes serpents. And that iconography also connected to the symbolism of the goose as this older pre-Christian animal associated with the native European goddess or goddesses. So is the snake. And oftentimes the same goddess had the goose as her animal and also had the snake as her animal. And that same goddess wound up being the great mother goddess, the great mother earth, in many names, Artemis, Potnia, yeah. Theron, Laventidoc, the mistress of animals, all of these. So, of all her creatures, the waterfowl, especially the goose, and the snake. And I started finding the snake associated with her as the most primal expression of her creation. There was one Romanesque sculpture that I saw from the 12th century, now preserved in a museum in Toulouse, of the mother earth giving birth to a snake. And you see it coming out of her vulva and going and breastfeeding on her left breast. And the art historian said, you know, it was misinterpreted as from the Garden of Eden and sin and Eve's great, you know, error and all this. But that's all wrong. It actually is an older iconography going back to pre-Christian associations of this is the way the Mother Earth was shown, giving birth to creation. And the serpent is shown most commonly in this relationship because it is the most primal form of life. I mean, we are all essentially a mouth, a middle, and an end, you know. It's the basic model. But no other creature than the snake caresses the earth with its entire body. So there's something very special about this creature. And I started realizing I need to learn a lot more about snakes to understand this whole association of spiritual initiatory paths and ancient iconography and how it represents creation, and that creation was really given
the creator was associated with the feminine form. So it's also the lost feminine divine that these two creatures are hinting at and preserving and carrying forward, even in contexts where the feminine divine is now put into a secondary position compared to the masculine divine.
Yeah.
And I found a wonderful New Testament scholar at the Princeton Theological Seminary, James Charlesworth, who wrote a whole book about the good and evil serpent. And he said, he also scratched his head, why has the serpent become associated with so much negativity, when in all ancient societies, including biblical societies, it was actually a positive force.
And more, it was revered. I mean, that's why I asked you about it, is because there's a healing energy of the snake and the serpent. And I wanted to ask you about that on your journey.
Yeah.
I mean, it is many things, but the one thing I know for sure is that it is one of the transformation totems. Like, totem is a strange word, but I'll use it. It is one of those. But it also represents healing. It represents life changes.
Yes.
And I would have been shocked if there wasn't one in your book. Right?
Yeah.
Because isn't it, when you take on a pilgrimage like this, it would be the one thing that I would expect to show up, except if you're in Hawaii. Because they don't have any there. Okay, so we wouldn't expect it in Hawaii, but I guarantee you, you'll get a bunch of other things in Hawaii.
Yeah.
What did you learn from it?
Yeah, you know, I learned, for one thing, I write more about the sculptures, the medieval sculptures depicting serpents, but I have had a number of snake encounters on the Camino and hiking in southwestern France.
Yep.
And a couple times with a viper. And any time you come into such close contact, immediate contact with a snake, everyone knows who's been there. You get a very different visceral feeling in your body compared to any other animal you've come in touch with. And I think that's one reason why they capture our imagination and we put them in that special position. Even the Old Testament puts the serpent as a very special creation that God was especially pleased with. You know, that's why the serpent is in charge of the tree of knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was a very special creature, but its positive associations are as regenerative, resurrection, fertility. And these are also associations that the goose has. These two creatures, they migrate. One migrates, one goes into hibernation. So they disappear seasonally and then they reappear. And one molts feathers, one sheds skin. They both lay eggs, which is a very external show of fertility, whereas we humans hide our fertility until we really show. You know, but from the very beginning, they're putting it out there. Got an egg. and they're also masters of the underground, you know, waterways and the subterranean world, but also of the Middle Earth and of the sky. They can transcend. They can move through water, air, stone, and the sky. So there's a bit of a shamanic association. They're in the three realms, the lower, middle, and upper. So there's a lot of things, and I think when you encounter a snake, especially, you feel that power of this creature that is so different from you, but also has so many universal traits.
And that's why I asked you about it, because it really talks to the many different aspects of your book and your journey and what people will experience along the way. You see, they will get to be part of that. Now, you know, look, whether you confront one head on or you relate to a glyph or you relate to a stone etching or you relate to something, right? I mean, because my first encounter with a snake wasn't real in person. It was through the imagery, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was through the diagrams, it was through the watercolors, it was through those kinds of things. And there's so much in your journey that is so fascinating to look at.
You know, there,
yeah.
There are people who are locals living on the Camino, serving the Camino, and they talk about the pilgrimage road across northern Spain as a serpentine road, and they talk about it having kundalini energy.
Exactly.
They talk about it connecting to your energy when you put your feet onto it, and this ley line energy. So it's, you know, at that level as well, mm-hmm. it comes into play.
I want to ask you this in the time we have left, and I know we have about, you know, 5 or 6 minutes left. There is a special message in the book, and everyone will get to take away their own message because that's the way you wrote the book.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to ask you, as you sit here today now, after the fact, how would you describe the book's message for the world?
It's a two-layered message. The first is, you know, when I first started following the goose, I was following arrows on the Camino. And at some point, I realized that the arrows are directing us for everything on the surface, which is important. You need to navigate. You need to find your way. But if you invert the arrow, it becomes a goose footprint. And it's saying, look below the surface. Look for things that are not immediately evident. Listen to them. Pay attention. Open your vision more widely and deeply to see what's really going on. That's the first. And the second is all this iconography and the survival. Why the goose again? I mean, this goose is also related to Mother Goose. This goose is related to ancient goddesses from native Europe and Asia. And why is it surviving in a medieval root and then in a Christian tradition? And the answer is that, you know, the more and more the Christian tradition became a patriarchal tradition and there was less voice for the feminine, the more these old voices found another way to survive. I mean, Mother Mary also has taken on, her shrines on the Camino are on Christian sites that venerated the native goddesses who were also associated with waterways, geese, snakes, and other natural beings. And that's where her shrines are. And so it's like the goose is the lost feminine divine that is held on. And Mother Goose is one of those vestiges of she keeps telling us her stories in a safe way where she won't get silenced. And the really deep message is we need to return to that balance where all voices count, because if they don't, none of us is whole. We're all lopsided. We're all leaning towards, you know, one version. And that's what I really learned is it's the Mother Earth saying, reconnect with me. You've severed yourself. You're now not even connected to this very planet that still sustains and feeds you, but you don't even realize it. And that is the lost feminine divine in the Western tradition. So that's the deeper message. Let's reconnect with the earth, revere her, live in balance with her, and take care of her and each other.
You know, it's so interesting you bring this up because everybody that listens to me knows that I have been a Greta Thunberg fan forever. Greta was like born and popped out and like, I don't even remember how old she was. And sometimes we mistake the divine feminine for being soft and gentle and being that thing that is so vulnerable and weak at times. But the divine feminine is not. You know, the divine feminine is compassionate yet powerful. You know, it is both smart and also intuitive. You know, there's so much depth to it. When I think about what you just said, I think about Greta. And I think about this child chose this life to have a bold cause, to then now be threatened, her life threatened, her family's life threatened, because she so believes in what you just said. Right? There's a Greta in all of us. And I want to encourage people to not just read your book, but imagine them changing something in their day. Just one thing in your day. If you all can change one thing in your day after reading this book, and by the way, when you read this book, it is going to be so easy for you to do because I already changed like 3 things in my day, and I got to go back to the book because I got to read it, one of the sections again. But this is more than a pilgrimage. What you're helping us understand is this blueprint for understanding and to pick something from what you've shared in your own life's journey that will allow us to change something
but innately is wanting to be changed in all of us. And I need to thank you for that.
Thank you very much. It was so beautiful what you just said.
Yeah, I want to thank you for that. You know, I can't imagine, but I'm going to ask you this. What's next for you? Are you going to start to take people on the pilgrimage? Like, what's next?
I'm working that out. You know,
hurry up.
I also, well, you know, I also write a guidebook on the Camino de Santiago that comes out of Moon Guidebooks from Berkeley and Hatchet Books. And so I'll continue returning to update the guidebook. And I fold in a lot of folklore and history and archaeology and stories in what is also a practical guidebook. So, and I just came back from the Camino and from southwestern France, and part of the work is that, and part of it is I'm starting to feel out, you know, what is the next project, and it's probably going to dive even more deeply into the folklore of these areas that are really starting to come to the surface and speak very, very much to our times. So it's really interesting to see the ancient and the modern connect. The other answer is I don't know. I'm exploring right now. I'm back out on the trail.
Yeah. That's actually why I asked you the question, because I think that what I want people to do is have a way to follow you and have a way to get the book. I do know that when you venture on what you ventured on and you write so beautifully about it, your life is forever changed. And trust me, when I came off of my first and second, my first vision quest mostly, my entire life changed. Everything, what I thought it was going to be, changed. Thank you for today. Please give out your website again. Tell folks how they can get the book. And thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you very much. It's been such an honor and pleasure to speak with you.
How do people get the book? It's everywhere, right?
It's everywhere. Google my name. My website will come up at the top, but it is bbbahrami.weebly.com, or Google the title of the book in the same thing. You'll find it all there.
Yes. Very easy for everybody to remember, The Way of the Wild Goose. Just go ahead and Google that, and B-E-E-B-E. That's the way my sister used to spell her name. So just go ahead and you'll see. And if you do nothing else, go over, take a look at it, and take a look at the table of contents. I guarantee you, once you look at just the table of contents, you will want to know more. Thank you so much, Dr. Beebe, for everything you're doing. And, yes, we will be waiting to see what you do next. But I do understand the process. You know,
thank you so much, Dr. Pat.
Yep. Sometimes after you venture and get yourself on a pilgrimage, you just have to be. Thank you, Dr. Beebe. Thank you, Michael. We're going to take a short break, everybody. Benny, we'll be right back. Give us a few minutes.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. Contests are the responsibility of the host of this program and not KKNW. This is Alternative Talk 1150 AM, KKNW Seattle, and KMUC 98.9 HD3 Seattle.
And good Tuesday to you. Benny Mathers here for a look at your Alternative Talk AM 1150 traffic update for around the town. Over on I-5 northbound, just north of Columbian Way, the recent collision partially blocking the HOV lane. Good thing Seattle police have arrived on the scene and they are taking care of that collision. Also, I-5 southbound, the express lanes just north of Mercer Street around milepost 169, a little further up, an obstruction blocking the right hand of the lane. Since the response team has arrived on the scene, they are taking care of that obstruction.
NBC News Radio, I'm Lisa Taylor. A hearing on the motion to unseal search warrant materials for the FBI raid on former President Trump's Mar-a-Lago property will happen Thursday. That comes following the Justice Department's hesitancy on the matter, citing the fact that the investigation contains highly classified material and information about witnesses. Numerous media outlets want the affidavit to be revealed, and Trump himself wants that to happen as well. Supporters of the former president want the head of the FBI and the U.S. Attorney General to be fired. They're furious about the raid of Trump's Mar-a-Lago home, and they're calling for more transparency. The European Union has confirmed it's received a formal response from Iran to recent proposals aimed at reviving the Iran nuclear deal. EU Foreign Affairs spokesperson Emilia Masrali said it wouldn't be drawn on the content of Iran's response or what Brussels makes of the text.
For the moment, we are studying it, and we are consulting with the other JCPOA participants and the U.S. on the way forward.
The 2015 accord, which offered sanctions relief for Iran in exchange for curbs of its nuclear activities, has been on hold since the U.S. withdrew in 2018 under former President Trump. The EU has been trying to stitch the deal back together for more than a year with stop-start negotiations, mediating indirect talks between Tehran and Washington. Catholic Charities is helping care for migrants who are arriving frequently in New York City. New York Cardinal Timothy Dolan met with some of the migrants today. He says Catholic Charities has helped roughly 1,500 of them with food, medical attention, and clothes. Dolan is also calling on officials to reform the immigration system and care for the asylum seekers. Texas Governor Greg Abbott has been sending busloads of illegal border-crossing migrants to New York and to other cities to protest President Biden's immigration policies. The first case of human-to-dog monkeypox transmission is being reported in Paris. The CDC has updated its website to include dogs on the list of 10 animals who are vulnerable to the virus. You're listening to the latest on NBC News Radio.
It usually takes 40 years for breakthroughs in natural health to finally make their way into standard medicine. Be way ahead of the curve by listening to the cutting-edge experts who are my guests on the Healthy by Nature show. I'm certified clinical nutritionist Marty Wagon. We want you to stay healthy and feel your best doing it.
Healthy by Nature, Thursdays at 7 a.m. Learn more at hbnshow.com. That's hbnshow.com. And let's go ahead and take a look now to alternative talk weather. Outlook for Tuesday, well, we'll see some morning clouds, but it'll burn off to mostly sunny skies by this afternoon. High temperatures around 79, 80 degrees. Tonight, clear skies, low temperatures back down to about 61, 62. For Wednesday, Thursday, and a little bit of Friday, those temperatures in the upper 80s to low 90s in selective areas, so be aware of that. Increasing clouds in the evening, but we'll still see mid-60s through the overnight. Partly sunny skies returning for Friday. Highs around 80.
Want to promote your business uniquely and effectively? KKNW is the answer. Let us help you produce a professionally sounding radio show or podcast. Learn more at 1150kknw.com. KKNW, talk variety that's live and local. The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. This program is sponsored by Dr. Pat Vasili and Transformation Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome. This is Dr. John DeMartini. This is one of the most amazing and inspiring shows that you can listen into. If you want to be on the edge of your seats, if you want to open up your heart, if you want to expand your mind, and you want to meet incredible people, stay tuned because you're just about to experience a transformative radio show that will change your life. And you're listening to the Dr. Pat Show is coming up right next to you.
Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. Talk radio to thrive by. Powerful, inspiring, and coming to you live, bringing you stories of people like you and me, busting through and living life full out. Get ready to dare to wonder what your life would be like if you knew you could not fail.
Wow. Hey, everybody, welcome. It's so great to have all of you tune us in and turn us on. Thank you, thank you, thank you so much. Let me say hi to Mike and hi to Benny. Hi to both of my producers today. Thank you all.
Hi, Pat.
I was just wondering, I was looking at the shows today, and now Mark Vitusa. I was looking at Linda scheduling these because she doesn't do things randomly. She does things that make sense to her. And I'm thinking, what are we going to... When You're Falling, Dive, Lessons in the Art of Living, exactly what I need to talk to him. And I said to Linda, just make sure we need an hour. I want to talk to him an hour because I forget this. I forget this. When You're Falling, Dive. And, you know, one of the things I love about this, because even though, Mark, you may not have thought about this, I reflected upon my first skydiving event. And And there are pictures of me. I don't know if Micah, if you got them, or Benny, if you have them. But one of the things you learn when you jump out of a plane, just saying, don't, I'm not saying for anybody to go do this, so please, I don't want to get emails from your partners and your spouses that Dr. Pat said. I am not saying. But when you jump out of a plane, you dive. And when you dive and you have that experience, why is it that truth and the video of me has the biggest smile on my face that I have ever had? People didn't even know I could smile like that. They were like, you've got to be kidding me. But what is it about that? What you don't know is the preparation that happens before you jump. What you don't know is what went on in the plane. You see, when you're falling, what is this about your life's journey that Mark talks about? What are the lessons you're going to learn about today that will help us all understand that there is a smile you can put on your face if you understood what he's written in his book today and what he shares? For those of you, I want to introduce you to my very special guest today so that those of you know who Mark is. First of all, if you find out about who he is, an award-winning author, a teacher, a speaker, but he focuses on transformative writing, whether it's personal, professional, spiritual development. And when you read something like that about somebody, you know that they've been through the fire. You know it. Because in order for you to get to that place, in order for any of us to be able to talk about any of this, reading about it in a textbook is not going to have us show up authentically. And so when you know this about somebody, then you're not surprised when you do read this book that comes across your desk and you think this book is just for you. Today you're going to hear about how you get through and thrive, how you get through some of life's greatest trials, and what is the secret knowledge about that? What can you learn about being out and understanding the art of survival? What does it mean to cross the own wilderness that's inside of each of us? What does that mean to really study and learn to find out that what's inside of you is always meant to come out and be powerful beyond our recognition? And what would you learn from Mark today as he's interviewed hundreds and hundreds of well-known survivors, right? But what is it about, folks, that can remind each of you, you too, like you, every one of us, we have it inside of us? Mark, it's great to have you here. Welcome.
Thank you, Pat. It's great to be here.
Every story, 20 years, I love doing this. I love learning. But every story, especially when you show up as powerfully as I've just described you, and I've just really just scratched the tip of the iceberg, starts with a personal journey. It starts with something that has either rattled our cage, rocked our boat, the parachute that you don't think is going to open as you're jumping out of the plane. So here's my question to kick us off before we really talk about this. See, underneath writing a book like this, you know what it's like to survive. You wouldn't have, this would not have been of interest to you. What is it, what challenges, what obstacles, what did you have to overcome to get you to be here in this very moment today?
Well, that really begins when I was a young kid. I grew up in a house where there was a lot of trauma and loss, violence, and fear. And there was nobody around to give me any guidance. So I became a seeker when I was a very young kid. I turned inward for answers to how to get through so much of the suffering and the pain that was around me. So that was the foundation, as I started writing when I was a very young child and realized that it could really be a path of self-insight. And then when I was in my late 20s, I was just an ordinary yuppie in New York City working in the magazine business and trying to climb the ladder, and I was hit with a fatal diagnosis, and I wasn't supposed to live for more than 5 years. So everything fell apart in my life. I quit my job. I followed a friend to India. I turned inward. I started asking myself the kind of questions that seekers ask themselves. And so for 10 years, I was really basically a Dharma bum living all over the world, wherever I could sleep on people's couches or a monastery, ashram. And I was preparing myself to die. I was really trying to cope with day-to-day terror of when is the shoe going to drop. And it was completely, you know, meant to drop. Well, it didn't drop. Treatments for my condition, you know, arrived. But I was able to go through that complete letting go of any sense of certainty or control. Mm-hmm. And that's really what set me up for the work that I've done, you know, as a memoirist and as a teacher. Because survivors are more deeply rooted in life than people who have not been tested. And this is such an important point, because when you get rooted that way, it vitalizes you. It brings you to life. It doesn't break you. It actually plugs you into a deeper source.
My gosh. I tell you, I was talking to a friend of mine this morning, Mark, and first of all, thank you for sharing that, because you and I have that in common. You know, I have achieved a lot in my life. I thought survival came at a very young age based on my childhood, my mom's suicide, being homeless. I thought that was survival. No, that wasn't it. Survival came to me, in your words, after I read your book and I read these stories. When it hits your physical state, okay, right? You're shaking your head, so you know what I'm about to say.
I do.
6 months after starting this journey, 20 years ago, I dialed the wrong phone number, and honestly, I go on a journey, everybody wanted to commit me. My friends, my partner, they're like, what are you doing? That was 20 years ago. I bought airtime, 1 hour. I paid a lot of money. It felt like breathing to me, and I've never looked back. Started a network. However, 6 months after this, man, I started to listen to people. Like, really? You're not going to take that big corporate job? Like, you went to school for 10 years. Look what you did. You won awards. And I got a mystery disease. And I'm telling you what you just described. I lived for 10 years with something that according to people, could have killed me in my sleep. But you see, that's why you and I are talking today, because we don't want people to have to go through that, right? I mean, isn't that why you do what you do? It's not to say to everybody listening, hey, you got to go through that. It's like, oh, no, you don't have to go through that. You can learn. Isn't that part of why you wrote this book?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We are all going to encounter suffering, impermanence, loss, sickness in our lives. That's not the point. But we don't have to go through it without insight, without awareness, and without really getting that we're not just this body. Because that's what you said. You started by saying that when it really hits you in your body, that's when you wake up. And it's true, because it forces you to look at what am I beyond the body? What is there a part of me that transcends the body, that survives the body? And that's what begins a spiritual life. So what I want to say to people is, when you're aware that your circumstances don't have to define who you are, and that pain and suffering are really there to wake you up, they're instructors and guides, it changes how you experience adversity. So it's true. People don't have to go through it blind. They can go through it with a lot of tools, which is why I wrote that book.
And, you know, I want to talk with people about the book. First of all, I mean, there are books, and, you know, when you open up a book, you look at the cover, but then you also look at the table of contents, right? And it's usually the table of contents. When I open this up, I go right to the table of contents, because I'm like, wait a minute, which one do I want to start with? Which story am I going to start with? Where do I want to start? Because I know enough about your book to know this is a journey. This is a journey through stories, but it's also a journey of people. And every story in here. I want to ask you, though, about this. This is going to be the weirdest question. I bet you haven't gotten this question. There's so much richness, but you chose to come out of the gate with this story, magical thinking, right? And I just want to be inside your head. And now I've read it, so I know. But I want to be inside your head, because you obviously thought that was an important place to start.
Absolutely, because magical thinking is one of our primary crosses to bear. It's a real obstacle when you're facing adversity. And I had interviewed Joan Didion, the great American novelist, and she had written a book called Magical Thinking, The Year of Magical Thinking, after her husband died. And when I was reading this book, it made me think, this is what we want to avoid. This is really a step that we can skip, because it kept her in a cycle of, you know, regret, expectation, denial, resistance for years that she then had to learn how to get over. So, with, you know, no criticism of Joan Didion, and it's a fantastic book that she wrote. But magical thinking isn't our friend when what we need is actual strength. Yeah. And the strength comes from facing the facts. It does. Information is the antidote to fear. Knowledge, you could say, is the antidote to fear. And so we need to look at what's actually going on if we hope to have any kind of stability, equilibrium, and resilience in our lives.
You know, I was talking to a friend of mine this morning. I was thinking of this story, and I was thinking of your book. And I have a friend that, oh, my gosh, the past 6 months from her entire life is upside down, the loss of her husband. You know, then things happening with home and having to really get things done in the home that she didn't expect. I mean, it's one thing after the other, right? Going through the estate and having their baby estate kind of issues. I mean, it was just one thing after the other. And I had a conversation with her today, and she said something fascinating to me, which I was actually surprised she had the wherewithal to say, what is this all for? Right, all of her to-do lists, because it's one thing to lose a loved one, but it's another thing to spend every day since that to really have to work on some very big issues, right, that you may not have faced before. And I said to her, in my own words, I think what you said. I said, look, you're not expected to be any other place than where you are right now. And your goal is to do the next indicated thing. That's what your mission is right now, right? And I said, don't underestimate what you've gone through, but the future will be revealed to you because you're in the middle of the journey right now. And even in the middle of the journey, you got to remember to drink your water. You got to remember to get your water. So you have to do the next indicated thing, and you're surrounded with people that could help you. And I was so struck by these stories and how the people in your stories knew the next indicated thing.
Because the only other choice, as everyone knows who's been in a crisis, is to do nothing, to stay in the corner, shut the door, shut the windows, and just rot and just give up. You get to a point when your back's against the wall, you don't have the luxury of a lot of rumination. So it becomes an act of survival. If I'm going to survive, not only as a body, but as a soul, as a spirit, then I'm going to have to say yes. And yes is, as you're saying, the next indicated thing. And it doesn't have, there is no right thing. That's the important thing. You know, if you take door A, you'll learn those lessons. If you take door B, you'll learn those lessons. So really, there's no right or wrong choice. There are better and worse, more skillful, more helpful choices and less, but there's no wrong choice.
Exactly.
Because I can tell you from my own experience, some of my wrong choices have led me to my life, my work, the things that matter the most to me.
Look, people ask me how I got started. I say I dialed a wrong phone number, and I did. That's what happened 20 years ago. And the odd thing is, like, you're in Boston now. I grew up in New York. You know this, and I know this. People that – this is not a bad thing, so please don't email me when I say this. But people in New York, we grow up according to a pace. We don't stay on wrong phone number phone calls. We just don't. It's not in our makeup. I mean, some of us – maybe now I do, but 2003, you dial a wrong phone number – you hang up. I didn't. See, and this is what I love about your book, and I want to jump to this. I want to ask you this one question. One of the stories, by the way, I will tell you, took place, I believe, if I read it right, in a part of Brazil that I found out my grandfather was born in. The best secret on the planet. Your grandfather was born in Brazil, and you thought you were Italian all your life. Hello. Found that out about 4 years ago. And I was reading about this because, you know, I'm fascinated by it. But
I'm really struck by this. I went through your book, and there's a part of me that got activated. What changed in you? Writing a book like this had to change you. I mean, it sounds impossible because you've been through so much. But I know when I read the book, I'm like starting to think and second think some things. How did writing this book change you, Mark?
It gave me a lot of hope and faith in the power of the human spirit. You know, I knew what I had been through. I knew some of the things I had done to make it, to survive. But when I realized one is part of a tribe of survivors, it's part of a human journey that's universal. And you realize that regardless of the circumstance and particular adversity that you're facing, it's part of a pilgrim's progress toward awakening that all of us are on. So where your wake-up call comes is irrelevant. Hopefully it will come when you're young. So you'll have the right? So then you have the time to actually have a second life or may it start a new chapter. Wherever it comes, it's part of an archetypal journey, a universal journey. And that's very strengthening because one of the things, as you know, when you're faced with pain and loss is to take it personally and to feel set apart or for me. Or this book removed the last remnants of that in me. And I realized that this is really part of something that is meant to happen.
Yeah. I'm gonna read from your words in the book. I just need to read this. It really begins the book, but it really is so important for people to read. A lot of people. So you all, I have told you a lot about reading books, but I will tell you the one thing you don't want to do is ever not read an introduction. What I have found, coming from somebody that grew up not being able to read, I have learned to really appreciate words and stories. And what I loved about this is how people, and I think you talk about it, whether you're in a hospital room or a penitentiary, and I work with women that are in jail and addiction and recovery, right? So I understand that. And boy, I could write a book about that, but I would have the women help me write the book. But what you say is so beautiful. You say many of them have learned to turn their obstacles upside down and realize, as one grieving mother told me, that no matter how painful life becomes, something else is also true. Unexpected gifts come in. Why am I crying over this? Unexpected gifts come in unlikely containers. I'm surprised, overjoyed to still be here, healed but not cured, chronically awestruck, grateful beyond measure for another day. I hope that this book is a comfort to you. Let its chorus of voices remind you loud and clear that even with the cards stacked against you, life is always worth the risk. So many people are feeling that life is stacked against them today.
It's true, and that's why I'm happy this book is being reissued at this particular moment.
I am, too.
A lot of people are facing the kinds of questions that folks who have, you know, gone through crises or terrible, you know, adversity have been asking for, you know, most of our lives. But now with the pandemic and with, you know, the rise of fascism around the world, all of what's going on, people are looking at life feeling like there's an overwhelming opposition to wellness. There's an overwhelming overwhelming obstacles to having a viable future.
Yeah.
And so to live that way, it's hard to find your way through that kind of a dark wood, a forest. And a lot of people are finding themselves in the middle of the forest trying to find their way out, which is what this book is meant to be, a kind of a light. It's a light with a lot of individual lights in it because, as you said, it's full of stories and people's different approaches to wisdom. But it's meant to be the kind of book that people can pick up in the middle of the night, open at any place, and get some wisdom, get some strength and some hope.
Yeah, it reminded me of, you know, my time out in the desert and looking at a very dark sky and watching each star pop up almost as if they come in one by one, you know, as the sun sets in the desert until the sky is filled with these beautiful stars and you find yourself drawn to one or the other, not always the biggest, but you just find yourself drawn. And I think that's what happens in the book. you know, there is a story for everyone. And I want to ask you about this because I used a skydiving analogy to open the show. Again, least likely person, didn't think I'd get out of New York, but love skydiving. And I remember the whole journey. I just remember it. And I remember the parts where you're preparing. Now, the title of the book, I have so many versions that I see of my life of falling. But I want to hear your version of this, because for people that don't quite understand the idea of falling and diving, unless you skydive, you don't fundamentally understand the difference. For me, falling from an airplane, you are so up against the resistance of the wind. I don't know if people can relate to that, but I just want to say, so when you come out of that plane, y'all, there is the falling part until you realize you don't have to experience that. And when you decide to put your head down, I know this sounds crazy, right? Put your head down, something energetically changes. Can you talk to your meaning that probably has nothing to do with my skydiving experience, but boy, it is a visual. It's a visual and a visceral experience for me to even talk about it.
Sure. The difference between falling and diving is surrender and giving over control to a force that's larger than we are. And I can actually tell a skydiving story that illustrates this perfectly. One of my oldest and dearest friends had dreamt of skydiving her whole life. So for her 50th birthday, she put together a little party of people to skydive together. And everyone went, and she wanted to go last. Everybody jumped out of the plane. Finally, it came to be her turn, and she said, "No, I'm not going." They said, "You have to go." She said, "No, I'm not going." And she had made a deal with them beforehand. If I don't want to go, push me. So the guys came and they pushed her out of the plane, but she never surrendered. She flailed. She was terrified. She landed on her feet, and she did a lot of damage to her body. And that's really a true story, and that's a perfect example of what happens when you don't give over to what's happening. You know, she was literally falling out of a plane and acting like she could, you know, could hold on. And what it did is it caused a lot of injuries.
So isn't that metaphorical?
About giving over.
Oh my gosh! See, I didn't know that. Look, I can only relate to this, but I can relate to parts of my life. Now that you've just described that, I want to take a short break. When we come back, I want to talk about some of the stories and some of the examples, because the message that I hope we bring as a network and the hosts bring and you bring in the book, and thank you for bringing this book back out, but it's not just about the book. This is a life path for you. People can join you. They can look at the Seekers Forum. They could look at the book. They can look at places. And I want to make sure, one, Mark, that people know what is the best way to find out more about you. What is the best way to step into a journey for those people that may not know some of the things we're talking about? Because everyone can participate. How do they find out about this? How do they get the book?
Well, the book is available wherever books are sold. People can look at my website, markmatusik.com, or my community for talking about these kinds of things, which is called theseekersforum.com. And I love connecting with people. These are both resources for a lot of what you're talking about, people who want to know where to start. But there are so many different options. The Seekers Forum, we have a huge resource library for people to dip in and say, well, that works for me, that resonates, that doesn't resonate.
I have to tell you, I love that you did that. And I want to say this to folks, because there is a way to get relief for whatever you're going through. That's why we do these shows. That's why I've been doing it 20 years. Never thought I'd end up being any good at it, just saying, like a kid that stuttered in the Bronx. That doesn't work in the Bronx. But here's what we're talking about. When we come back, we're going to talk about what is the opening. If you're listening to this, there's an opening. I'm just saying. But what is the opening that you might tap into? Because what Mark has been able to bring to the forefront is that there is a story in each of us. There's a story that could tell us how victimized we are.
there's also a story that could tell us how victorious we are, how powerful, greater than you can imagine. When we come back, I'm going to share some of those stories. And by the way, it is, thank you for texting me. I'll say it slowly. TheSeekersForum.com. The, T-H-E, put that in front of it like the Dr. Pat Show. If you put that, The Seekers Forum. When you get there, you're going to find there's opportunities to become part of something. There are programs. All of it's right there. And then Mark's website, and yes, I will also tell you about that, and I will spell it for you. Thank you for texting me. I love that my listeners have my phone. It's Mark Matusek. I'm going to spell it. Mark, MarkMatusek.com. But Google, when you're falling, dive. Go ahead and Google it. Benny, Micah, let's take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk story. We'll be right back, everyone.
Optimize your breast cancer screening without any radiation or pain. Effective, sensitive, and widely used thermal imaging in Europe is now available to you here in the U.S. Using state-of-the-art FDA-approved camera, Eastside's first and only breast thermography clinic is now open in Bellevue. Safe, sensitive, low cost, no referrals needed. Contact Holistic Medical Center at 425-451-0404 or on the web, drdarvish.com.
It's time to tap into your divine self through angelic guidance. Join your host, Cindy Smith, and co-host in the Angel Empowerment Show from I Can't to I Can, airing every Monday, 6 p.m. Pacific, on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Learn from four of the best angel empowerment practitioners in the field. Together, they will share experiential teachings and offer live, on-air professional angel card readings and much more. For more information, visit CindySmithAEP.com.
Tune in to Knowledge Book Radio with host Marge Patassa the fourth Tuesday each month at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Through many experiences, Marge was led to the Knowledge Book, a gift to humanity in its transition to the Golden Age that provides truth and answers. She now shares information from the Knowledge Book with you monthly on TransformationTalkRadio.com on Knowledge Book Radio. For more information, visit usa.theknowledgebook.net.
Tune in to Awaken Your Magic Within, reveal unconscious systems to discover your unstoppable freedom power. Join me, Tracy Lynn Wallace, on TransformationTalkRadio.com the first Tuesday of each month, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, to gain insight, direction, and tools to uncover limiting beliefs. Get ready to step into your unstoppable power to discover and uncover your magic within.
Sometimes being human has its challenges. Our physical health falters, our spirits sag, our dreams don't immediately come to fruition. Welcome to the power of Maximum Medicine Radio. Join me, Doc Martin, in conversations that will blow your mind about healing. In our hit show, Doc Martin addresses the scientific with bridging to the mystical approaches to give you a new narrative about Maximum Medicine. In this live call-in show, we will journey into the extraordinary genius of the human body and talk about other beliefs that impact being your multidimensional self. We seek the seen and the unseen and explore the earthbound and the otherworldly, all with the purpose of calling forth the maximum you. To learn more about Doc Martin and Maximum Medicine, visit www.SharonMartinMD.com.
Oh, my gosh. I have to tell you so many stories. I mean, you know, we're talking about stories, and I didn't even say welcome back, Benny. So sorry, kind of forgetting. I want to welcome everybody back. Welcome back to the Dr. Pat Show. I was just, like, talking with Mark Matusek joining me here today, and he is the author of many things, but right now we're talking about When You're Falling, Dive,
lessons in the art of living. And so what this book has, it has so many stories, okay, you know, because that's what Mark does and does it so well. He does many other things. But part of what this book is about is understanding adversity, understanding how adversity becomes powerful awakening. Now, Mark, you and I earlier we shared, it's not that my only awakening was having my body fail, and by the way, overnight. Like March 31st, my body was great. April 1st, it just came apart. But it's not just about that. I had many other opportunities for that to wake up, and I did do a little awakening. I really did, leaving my corporate job because I looked in the mirror one day and I was unrecognizable to myself, like stop drinking and using at the age of 40. But I want to ask you this question. As you went through these and you heard these people tell their stories, which ones of these really stuck with you today? Which ones come to mind today? I know I put you on the spot, right?
Well, there are so many wonderful stories. I would say three that I would talk about. The first is a woman named Maria Hewson, who you mentioned when you read from the introduction. She wrote a wonderful book about her daughter's death called Hannah's Gift. And what she said to me is after her daughter, three-year-old daughter, was diagnosed with cancer, everything fell apart. Her marriage fell apart. Her other relationships fell apart. She was suicidal. But she had a revelation one day. She realized that no matter what was going on, something else is also true. And that we don't, all the information isn't in. And that's knowing that is what was the light that got her through the worst darkness. That was an amazing story. The second one is Ram Dass, who is somebody I'm sure your listeners know of.
Oh, my God. I did a great interview with Ram when I first started out. And, yeah, tell his story because it's amazing.
Yes. Well, about 20 years ago, an editor friend called me and said, Ram Dass, I'm doing a book with Ram Dass. He's just had a major stroke, and he needs somebody to help him finish his book. And he was, you know, paradoxically writing a book about conscious aging. And what he realized when he, this is someone who had traveled the world 50 years, he was an ambassador of enlightenment and, you know, caretaker to the world. Suddenly he realized that he still had work to do. And that part of his stroke was telling him that he needed to be embodied. And so I worked with Ram Dass for a year on the book Still Here. And something he said to me has been very influential. What he said is that everything in life falls away. Everything, the body diminishes, people die, you know, that life is impermanent. But one thing increases, and he said, and that's wisdom. He said, till the day you die, you can be building wisdom as everything may else fall away, but that is something that grows and that gets stronger. And that's been really important to me as I've gone through my own losses, realizing that the insight that comes is something, it's a richness, and it's something that we can take forward with us. And the other story, Pat, is Stanley Kunitz, who was a great poet. And I met him right before his 100th birthday, and he was just an extraordinary man. And he said to me, he said, reinvention is my philosophy. He said, I don't wake up every day as a nonagenarian. I wake up as a poet. And he, the sense of life beginning again every day, and that reinvention is always possible. And being surprised by our lives, you know, not becoming same old, been there, done that, but always being open to new experience is a way of resilience. It's a way of strengthening our spirit. And Stanley Kunitz was an extraordinary example of that. So those are three of the stories that I've really used in my own life. The principles have helped me stay clear in times when things get cloudy and as you know, life can feel overwhelming.
It is. And yet what I love about this is, see, I have an expression that I don't know how to say any better than I say it. Sometimes you can't plan this stuff, right? Mm-hmm. But you better plan to be awake enough and aware enough to know when it's showing up.
That's good.
Right?
Yes, exactly.
I mean, you and I 20 years ago, I am pretty sure it was about the same time that we were talking to Ram Dass. I even flew down to one of the conferences to interview him. And he talked about, I mean, I'm getting ready to pull some of these interviews and play them again because they're so rich. And he's talking about his time trying to get on a plane, after the stroke in a wheelchair. And so when I say you can't plan these things, but you really do need to plan your readiness for when they show up. Isn't that also a theme that comes through? Some of these folks, when you read about it, they didn't plan these things. You don't plan the loss of your child or a husband or whatever you want to call it. But there's something inside of each of us that can be ready for when those things happen. Isn't that what this book is also about?
100%. It's about a spiritual preparation, it's about psychological preparation, it's about doing the work of awakening during our lives so that when something happens, we have that perspective, that insight into the fact that we're not just our body, that challenge is there to awaken us. These kinds of principles can become part of how we think and how we see, so that when you lose your friend, when you get the diagnosis, when your job falls apart, when your wife leaves you, you're not without tools. You're not without awareness. You've done some preparation. You're not completely surprised and thinking, well, how could this happen to me? Why wouldn't it happen to you? You're a human being. So a lot of people go on automatic, and they want to ignore the human condition. And until life comes along, clobbers you over the head, and you can't ignore it anymore. It's much, much better not to wait to that moment to begin the journey of self-knowledge and self-discovery.
Yeah. You know, I don't think any of us, Mark, could have planned these past 3 years. I didn't. But here's what I've learned, and I would love for you to talk to it because some of the stories are in the book. I've often wondered why certain things pop up in my life. I thought about this. Yeah. I don't ruminate on it. I don't lose sleep. But I've often thought about it. And I've thought about what have those things done to prepare me for where I am today and what I am called to do. And what I learned from these 3 years is I thought I was prepared for what I'm called to do, and they helped me get more prepared. How do these things, through the stories, through your life, how can we talk to people to say, yes, we understand what you're going through, even now, even though the rest of the world and maybe the government thinks, oh, COVID's over. But honestly, if you're a small business, you are feeling it, right? We all know that. But it's preparing us. And these stories in your own life, my sense is it doesn't matter what crawls out from under the rock. There's something in that thing that crawls out from under the rock that's getting ready for us to look at a bigger rock, right? What do you think?
Absolutely. And I think the pandemic came along at a moment when we've forgotten that we are connected as a global species. You know, this has forced us to acknowledge our mortality, our fragility, our impermanence as a species. This has never happened in human history before. And it's no accident that it's happening at a time when we're endangering the planet. We're endangering our immune systems. We are overusing animals and animal products, the cruelty to animals. This points to all of those issues that the pandemic grew out of. So it is a big awakener. It's a global awakener. And I know a lot of people, as I'm sure you do, who have really changed their lives because of this. They've given up jobs that they hate. They've left relationships that weren't working. They've given up certain things that were harming habits that were killing them. The pandemic has awakened a lot of people, and that I think it's preparing us for what is coming. Because when you look out there, Pat, I don't have to tell you, it's a dangerous, dangerous moment on this planet. It's rich, and it is unprecedented in the number of different dangers. You know, from superbugs to fire tornadoes to famines to refugees, it's gotten overwhelming. And so I think the pandemic is the first, how can I say, it's like a 10-pound weight and we're in the gym. We're starting with like a 10-pound or a 5-pound weight because the truth is most of us, we're inconvenienced, but we didn't actually suffer that much. There are things coming down the pike that are going to take a lot of strength and a lot of community and connection that this is preparing us for.
Yeah, I love this, and I love talking with you about it because part of this, and you read through the stories, and there are some of them that, you know, you'll relate to some and the other, and some people will relate to others. But, man, there are lessons, as you say, when you surrender and let go. And I want to reach back out and talk to you about that. For me, it was a process in learning. You know, there have been some moments in my life where I've been shocked into surrender. Like what I shared with you, walking down in my fancy outfit, getting ready to go to my high-paying corporate job, and stopping in the foyer. I called it a foyer because it's Jersey. Stopping in this big place at the bottom of the stairs with two giant doors on 5 acres, right? And there's a mirror because you always have to check the way you look before you get into your fancy sports car, don't we? Right? And I remember this one day with my beautiful collie, and I'm looking in there, and I'm like, who the are you?
Right?
I can't cuss on the show. But I literally said that. I was unrecognizable to myself. Mm. See, that's one of these things. I call that a point of surrender, that I was willing enough to look and just be aware of that. Let's talk about how folks listening here maybe thinking, I'm not that person. I haven't lost a child. I didn't go through this illness. You won't have to. What we're trying to say to you, you may have a mirror moment. Right?
That's right. That's right. And in that moment, you could have said no, turned away from it, and just gone up to your office or, you know, I don't know which direction you were moving. But you didn't do that, and that changed your life. It gave you your real life. As far as people using this, Pat, everyone suffers. Everyone hurts. Everyone loses. Everyone gets sick. Everyone has fear. So we don't have to wait till we are overwhelmed by a life-threatening crisis to start to do this work of awakening. But as I said earlier, a lot of people go through their lives trying to deny the human condition. Oh, I'm fine. You know, I'm not scared. You know, I get confident. They're in control. And they hold on to that. The ego holds on to that as long as it possibly can until, you know, very often life just has to, you know, beat us up and pull it away. What I'm saying to people is we can start to do this work now, and it's important. There's nothing more important than this work. We're talking about wisdom. We're talking about awakening to who we are. And that's what we're here for. And having these kinds of challenges and threats force us. That's the beauty of them. They force us to start to look beyond the material world and our self-centered little ego self. That's the beauty of them, if we use them. Or we can turn away from the mirror, and we can go into denial, we can hold on to it as long as, you know, possible, and then on our deathbed we can be resisting what's happening so that we go sort of kicking and fighting into that good night. That's not the way I want to die. And it's not the way I want to live. I don't want to live in denial of who I am, what's happening, and what really matters.
Yeah, I love being able to talk about this because there is a future. It's like this morning with my friend, you know, and I know what that feels like to wake up one day and to say, I don't know what this is all for. You see, I imagine my mom felt that right before she committed suicide. I would imagine the first time she attempted suicide, she felt that. And the second time, she was very clear. She couldn't get clear on that. And she didn't have the help. She didn't have the tools. She didn't have you to talk to or me to talk to. You know, back then, women that were feisty, that wanted a better life, you just give them a prescription from Dr. Jacoby. But if my mom was here and she left me with so much of who she is inside of me, but if she were here today, she would tell all of us that there is such a thing as hope, and then there is such a thing as hope in action. And see, what you're writing about and these stories are writing about
is you're taking hope to that Ram Dass level. Ram Dass didn't say, we're not going to write the book. He's like, we got to get them out. And I want to ask you about that, because so often, and some of the stories here, you know, may not be clear to people, but I've learned something, and I think you have done it, you've learned it too. I know I can't do it alone anymore, but I really did try in my life. I know that I can't do it alone anymore. And I want to talk about that message in the book as well.
Absolutely. And that, well, you're talking about humility, and that's what crisis does, is it humbles you. You realize your limitations. As great as we are, we have limitations. It also forces you to acknowledge that you are connected to other people. You know, you're not doing this on your own. And that's the beauty of it, is it makes us, you know, it makes us look at that, because, you know, the ego is all around, is all about fear. It's about denying that we need other people. It's about imagining that we are in control. So until we lose that, we can't have any intimacy in our lives. We can't have any true wisdom in our lives, because it's based on a lie. It's based on the lie of the mind that tells us that we're solid, we're not going anywhere, you know, we know what's going on in our lives. Well, we don't know what's going on in our lives. The truth is that we don't know who we are, where we came from, where we're going, or why we're here. These are ultimate mysteries that none of us have solved. So living in that mystery is what this practice is about. It's what the journey of resilience is about. It's living in mystery. And getting this mystery is extraordinary. And it's always revealing itself in ways that we, as you said earlier, can't plan, but are really beautiful and are there for our learning and for our support and our enlightenment.
Yeah. As we move forward, what are you most? I know, this is interesting. We're talking about stories of survival, but I want to really go to this next thing. And I think it's what we're all made of, Mark. I think inside of us, we all have, oh my gosh, one of the biggest debates I've ever had was with Eckhart Tolle. And I called him and I said, dude, you better recognize Ram Dass for your book. I'm just saying. And, you know, I did that, like, he was really popular on Oprah and everything, and I'm like, sending him little messages, like, everybody's reading them, right? Like, I'm trying to say, please, recognize Ram Dass, right? Because he wrote the first book on this. Can you just please acknowledge that 3/4 of what you have in your book, like, Ram was talking. So my point is this. There is the work we do inside, and there is the level of power we have to see in each and every one of us. And I wanted to ask you, if you could talk to 1 to 3 things that you would say right now, it's important for people to have. Back then for me, when that was me and I was doing this, I was really ignorant. I had studied the consequences of broken promises for 10 years. So to see Ram Dass, who I read everything he wrote, and then not see him get credit, he did finally get acknowledged for it. It just didn't make sense to me. So there was a level of integrity that I was learning to become in my life, which I had never been before. So I was a little bit overboard. What would we say to people here now would be on your top 3 for people to say, look, this is what y'all can do now?
The 3 things would be surrender. And that means saying yes to your life in this moment, in all of its strangeness and mystery and difficulty, allowing for the whole thing to be there, including your shadow. It's very important to acknowledge the shadow and surrender to those parts of ourselves that we reject, that we resist, that we push away. The second thing would be humility, because working on humility, it softens the ego. It gives us a sense of humor. We stop taking ourselves quite so seriously. We realize that we are part of a whole, and that while we are great, we also have limitations. So humility is the awareness of our proper proportion in the universe. That's how I think of humility. And that is something that we need to think about all the time. And the third quality really is joy. You know, we forget about joy. We're so connected to pleasure. We're so connected to the quick hit. How many likes did I get? Instant gratification. The superficial forms of happiness that we forget about joy, which is happiness with meaning. It's happiness that resonates and that doesn't need an object of satisfaction to be there. And a lot of folks are forgetting about joy. We live in such a cynical age, in an age when we were saying there's so much fear and a lot of depression. The suicide rates are through the roof. Addiction rates are through the roof. The antidote to addiction is joy and surrender and humility. You're in the program, or you said you had sobriety. The first step is to recognize that you're powerless. That's surrender. That's humility. And ultimately, it leads to joy because you get to drop your illusion, this whole weight of illusion and denial. It takes so much energy and so much life force to deny and push things away. When we stop doing that, joy becomes a part of our lives. And joy is an attitude. It's a way of being. It doesn't mean being cheerful and happy face. You know, joy can have bad days. But still, there's an underlying joy that we're here at all. And for people like you and me, people who have survived the worst, you know what I'm saying. Even on a bad day, you're grateful to be here. I'm grateful just to be here. A day doesn't pass that I don't feel glad, you know, to be here, even when they're bad days. So that's an experience that can really bring people back to life at times when they're feeling so beaten down, so disheartened that they can't find their way into the surface.
Yeah. And, boy, that's why we do what we do, and that's why we schedule what we schedule, and that's why we have these conversations, Mark. Before we run out of time here, please tell folks how they can get a copy of the book. But also, I want folks to know how they can connect with you, also about the forum, because I really mean it. I am not talking to you because I did this all by myself. Even this show today takes a village, takes people. Look, if we were meant to do things alone, and I've said this a million times, I'd have my own planet and you'd have your own planet, okay? That's where we would be. But you are bringing people together, especially in the forum. So how do we get a copy of the book? How do we get to your website and tell people about the Seekers Forum?
Sure. Well, the book is available wherever books are sold. I recommend going to Indie Books over Amazon just because I'm on the side of independent bookstores. But you can order the book or get it in any brick-and-mortar store. My website, markmatusik.com, talks about the work I do using story as a path of transformation and writing as a tool for self-inquiry and self-knowledge. And the Seekers Forum, which is theseekersforum.com, is a community I started in 2013 because I wanted a place to have these kinds of conversations, to talk about the questions that really matter with seekers from across the board. So it's a non-sectarian group. We have Hindus, we have Buddhists, we have atheists and agnostics, we have Christians, Jews. It's secondary. What matters is that we're all people who are interested in this question, who am I? And realizing that really is where the juice of our lives comes from. So I give a weekly guided writing session for members, which is terrific. I give a monthly talk. We also have guest interviews. So each month I have a luminary from this month we had Ken Wilber, who's an extraordinary man. So we have wonderful guests. It's a great community, and I would just really like to welcome people to, you know, check us out. It's very, very unique. I don't know any other site that really does what we're doing.
Yeah, and, you know, I got to tell you, it is all part of the learning process and the growing process, because you and I said it at the beginning of the show, and I want to repeat it. We are not here to tell people that you have to get a disease that looks terminal in order for you. That is not what Mark is doing. That's not why I do it. We're here to help you create those mid-course corrections in your life without those. Right, Mark?
That's right. Exactly right. Yes, Kat.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers.